They never wanted me. The curse is laid upon my race. Useless serpents, they bring disgrace. A man without a face. Time they pass again. It's so hard to tell where and when. Yeah, just do the best you can. The flames will burn away the waste. All the lies that they told erased. A man without face. A man without a 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 face.
Welcome, dear ladies and gentlemen, to the Rabbit Hole Radio Show with your host, David James. Welcome, welcome, wherever you're listening, however you're listening, whatever time it is. I hope that you're ready to learn some more about the enemy and the patterns of the enemy. And this is one of my missions, to teach everyone the patterns of this enemy so that you can recognize their operations throughout the world. So what we have to do here is we have to just keep showing different people from different time points that are actually testifying to the same things that we have told, that we or I have told you. There are people today telling you the truths about the Jews, and there have been people that have been doing this throughout all of time, but they've been snuffed out. Nobody knows about them. So we dig out these books, you know, like Robert Edward Edmondson's book that I did, and Elizabeth Dilling, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and this book here. And it just shows reconfirmations of what I've been teaching you for the past 4.5 years. And I think it's wonderful to see testimonies from other people and in different. What's funny is Robert Edward Edmondson and Elizabeth Dilling were giving you these testimonies back in the 30s and 40s. So it's not like I read their books and started teaching their stuff. It's like I've been teaching this stuff and came across their books and voila, look what happens. It's the Father. It's always the Father who directs me to these things and helps us to understand. So we're in this book, as you know, by Maurice Pinet. It's a Catholic document. And there's been some very good things we've learned in here. And there's many things that have been reconfirmed. We're on chapter 2, and it's more concerning the Jewish religion. Now, I told you, these people don't understand. They think Judaism is a religion, and they think that Christianity spawned out of Judaism, but that couldn't be further from the truth. Not only is Judaism not really a religion, it's a criminal cartel worldwide, as I'm going to keep pointing out, until people get it. It's the mafia. It's a Jewish mafia. That's what it is. In the guise of a religion, to take advantage of the things you would take advantage of as being a religion. If it's a religion at all, it's the religion of theft, the religion of Satan, the religion of Antichrist, the religion of evil. It's not, they claim the Talmud are holy books. They're not anywhere close to being holy or good or any of that. They're completely evil. Could you find some truth in the Talmud? Well, I would assume you could. But anyway, so in the present chapter, something will be learned concerning the teachings of belief of the so-called honorable Jews. In order to be able to prove with all the greater clarity that no relationship or kinship exists between the latter and the religion of the Christians. So, the first thing which one must bear in mind with the studying of modern Jewish religion is the fact that it is a question of a secret religion, in contrast to the remaining religions whose dogma, teachings, and customs have a clear character and therefore could be learned by anyone at choice, even those standing on one side. After the crucifying of Jesus, the Jews kept concealed over the centuries from Christians and the nations all those teachings and customs which, because they represented a threatening of other men, had to be concealed. They rightly feared that if people knew their teachings, they would answer with violence against the Jews. And of course, you would. You see, it's funny that you would think that, you know, the Jews telling you all they do is lie. There's a few truth-telling Jews that try to make it so that we're playing the good Jew, bad Jew game, right? You realize that. But they're assuming it's just like the Teflon rabbi. They assume that you'll never really do any investigation for yourself, and you'll just take it on their word that the Talmud are holy books and that Christianity came out of the Talmud and all these things. But just a little bit of investigation would reveal so much to you if you looked into it. So, in the text of the Talmud, we're back to the book, In the text of the Talmud, one can read the following, quote, "To communicate anything of our law to a non-Jew means the death of all Hebrews. For if the non-Jews knew what we teach about them, they would exterminate us without mercy." The lie has been the most principal weapon of those whom Christ, already in his time, called the synagogue of Satan. With lies and deceit, they have controlled the peoples with their Freemasonic revolutions, and with lies and deceit, they lead the latter to the communist revolutions. It may suffice to mention that they even make use of lies for matters not concerned with their own so-called religion. Now, they are going to keep using this term that they have a religion here, but I'm telling you, they don't. They cheated the Christians and non-Jews in that they made the latter believe that the present Jewish religion is exactly the same as all the others, that they have restricted themselves to worship God, Yahweh, to establish norms for morality and to defend spiritual values. But at the same time, they pay very great attention to concealing from the world that their so-called religion is in reality a secret sect which pursues the purpose of destroying Christianity, which in addition hates Christ and his church to the death, and which attempts at first to control the remaining peoples of the earth and then to enslave them. Yes, through democracy, ladies and gentlemen, that's what I've been telling you. The New World Order for the Jews. And what's interesting is I just told you that these books of the Talmud are Antichrist, and you know that the Jews do not accept Christ and that they hate Christ. You've seen it over and over and over and over again. So there's no question, there's no need to prove that to you. They hate Christ. They killed him, and they still hate him, and said that they would kill him again if he came now, and they would. See, if he came now, again, in the same capacity, they would say he was an anti-Jewite and a hater, and they would kill him again. And so they are Antichrist. They were. John said the Antichrist is already with us. That's what he's talking about. I don't know how we got so far off kilter here. People used to know, our people used to know that the Jews are the Christ killers. They used to know that the Jews are the fox, the stay away from them. In the German books, they would teach the school children that the Jew was the fox, and the fox always was there to deceive. Remember, fox equals 666, just so you'll know. I don't know if the Germans knew that, but you know it now, don't you? And the fox is red, isn't he? Yes. History shows us how clever this caution of the Talmud, quote-unquote, is. When Holy Church, when the church discovered the masters or rabbis taught their believers in secret, they ordered upon various occasions and confiscation and destruction of books of the Talmud, quote-unquote. In view of the danger that their teaching signified for the Jews, namely for those who in very violent religious manner accept unconditionally and with zeal of belief the teachings of the Talmud, quote-unquote, and of the Kabbalah, quote-unquote. You dig? A further Jewish deceit was useless, which consisted of preparing false texts of the Talmud, which then were brought before the civil and church authorities without the passages whose reading was regarded as dangerous for the Christians. Now, let me stop right there. There's your proof. I told you that there's one set of books, just like the Jewish banker has one set of books for the to be viewed by the government or the IRS or whatever, and then they have another set of books. You understand? So they have one face that they use for when they're dealing with us, and they have one face that they use when they're amongst themselves. I hope you're connecting these dots. Well, it's the same thing. He just said right here that Jewish deceit was useless, which consisted in preparing false texts of the Talmud. In other words, they have the real Bavli, it's called, which has all the filth in it, and they went and they prepared a watered-down version which removed all the stuff that was dangerous for Christians. That's what they're telling you. So you could be tricked into reading books of the Talmud, and they might not be the right one. Just a warning. The Miss Haverbeck from Germany, who they put in jail, she's 88 years old, she said when she read the books of the Talmud, it made her literally sick to her stomach. It was that sickening. So you'll know if you have the right Talmud or not. Books. It's not just one book, it's a set of books. For frequently, both the church as well as civil governments also discovered the authentic texts, and the general indignation was often revealed in violent reactions against the religious sects of Jewry, whose authentic holy books already contained the plans for the conspiracy, which they have developed against the whole of mankind. The Jewish writer Cecil Roth, which means red, Cecil Red, speaks abundantly in his work Storia del Popolo Ebraico of the condemnation of the Talmud by Pope Gregory the Ninth and his successors up to that of Pope Leo the Tenth in the 16th century, which it had its origin in an intimation of Cardinal Carafa, according to which the work was destructive and blasphemous. This revelation was made by the Jew Vittorio Aleano, who was the nephew of the Jewish scholar Elia Levita. Both of these have the name Eli in them. Elia, E-L-I-A, and Jew Vittorio Aleano, E-L-I. Very interesting. And had its own consequence on the public burning of the work in the autumn of 1553 on the Campo di Fiore of Rome. In the trials of the Inquisition, which were conducted against the concealed Jews, whom the Holy Church called Jewish heretics, quote unquote, can be found another richly informative source about the secret and factual religious doctrines of beliefs of the Jews. Those who would like to penetrate deeper into this study should use for this purpose the archives of the Inquisition of this capital of the Catholic world, that of Carcassonne and Narbonne, and other cities of France, those of Simancas in Spain, and those of La Torre de Tum in Portugal. For those in Mexico, trials of Luis de Carvajal el Mozo, from which one can appreciate the mode of thought of the Jews and obtain knowledge of certain very information that's a very informative, excuse me, religious doctrines. Relative to this is an addition by the government of Mexico from the main archive of the nation, quote unquote, of the year 1935, which was an official publication. In it are found the original handwriting with the corresponding signatures of the accused Jews, the inquisitors, witnesses, etc. The validity of the document is beyond doubt, and the contemporary Jews themselves have not been able to deny it. The content of this document is something most horrible. I'd like to see these documents. Monstrous blasphemies against Jesus Christ and the Most Holy Virgin Mary. You know, that's the Catholic way of saying these things. A satanic hatred against Christianity, which is just what I told you. A hatred that has nothing to do with the law given to the real Moses by Yahweh on Mount Sinai, but which represents the nature of the secret religion of modern Jewry itself. A religion of hatred, of wild hatred, which calls for a bloodbath of the Christians and persecutions of the church, and which has been unleashed as unbridled and disastrous evil, explosive in all places where Jewish Freemasonic and Jewish communist revolutions have been victorious. From the second trial against Luis de Carvajal, which begins towards the end of the 16th century in the year 1595, we will, with true regret, take leave of the same. For it is urgently necessary that we again conciliate our Jesus Christ. I removed the Lord thing. We can again conciliate Jesus Christ and the Most and Virgin Mary for the blasphemies uttered by the Jews. And further, it is urgently necessary to prove the untruthfulness of this strange thesis, which at the present time is represented by some clergy. The latter assert that it is improper to fight against Jewry, since a relationship, nevertheless, exists with the Christian's religion. An assertion which borders on insanity and which can only prosper among those who, in ignorance of the problem, have fallen into the trap as victims of Jewish lies. I hope you're paying attention. I really do. Because this is very important to understand. Jewish lies are the same as Jewish fables. And these fables are lies, like the Holocaust is the primary, I call it the primary Jewish fable. Other ones are equality and brotherhood. Those are, and the liberty that they're talking about, those are complete lies. It's not the real liberty. It's not the real brotherhood. And there is no equality. Not even in the white race, there's no equality, except for we're all born equal, but we all aspire and we all can outdo each other in certain things. So there's no real equality when you're talking about he created us equal, but whether we excel more than another, that has, you know, that's always there, competition. It's healthy. Chapter 3, Curses of Yahweh Against the Jews. Jewish Freemasonry, communism, and the various political forces that control both have brought countless attacks against the temporal policy of the Holy Catholic Church, the Babylonian Catholic Church. One of the most frequent attacks is made with reference to the inquisitional, court and the publicity made judgment of the religious court, which some clergy, out of lack of knowledge of history or as a result of propagandistic Freemasonic liberal influence, have been duped to the degree that they think that the church has erred in its inquisitorial policy. And things have come to such a pass that they attempt to avoid this question with verbal disputes or with unconscious feeling of guilt. This shameful conduct stands in contrast to the personal behavior of some Jewish historians who, as believers in truth, approve some positive points of the inquisitorial system, like Cecil Roth, who says in his work, Storia del Popolo Ebraico, says, one must admit that, from its standpoint, the Inquisition was just. Only rarely did it take steps without a reliable foundation, and when a matter was in progress, the ultimate purpose consisted of obtaining a complete admission, which, united with the feeling of repentance, would redeem the victims from the terrors of eternal torment. The punishments laid down were never regarded as such, more as a redeeming sacrifice. Well, they won't be redeemed, I can tell you that. And that's just pure. We know that the scriptures say that the Jews have no part in the kingdom. In this much disputed matter, which the enemies of Catholicism have regarded as the Achilles heel, quote unquote, of the church, one must not lose sight of reality in the midst of the host of lies, falsification, and historical deceit, which conceal the truth as if with a dense undergrowth, which was intentionally woven for this purpose by the Jews and their accomplices. The inquisitorial policy of the church, far from being something punitive or anything else, or anything of which the church should be ashamed, was not only theologically justified, but of the greatest value for mankind, which, thanks to the Inquisition described by the popes, councils, theologians, and saints of the church as holy, then saw itself freed of the catastrophe that now threatened them, and which would already have occurred centuries ago, several centuries. We are not of the opinion that in the present one should attempt to force religion upon anyone by violence, nor that anyone should be persecuted on account of his ideas, for the truth will be able to establish itself without the necessity of resorting to compulsory methods. In fact, we know that the church, tolerant and good-willed in its early times, had to adjust itself in the face of an extraordinary situation. There was the deadly threat of international Jewry and what they had planned for all Christianity in the 12th century. That would mean the 1100s, folks. Just think about that, the 1100s. This threat, in its gravity, can only be compared with that at present, that which at present is represented to free mankind by Jewish communism. In order to save Christianity from this danger, the church had to take refuge in the most extreme methods, whose justification is already proven solely through the circumstance that the misfortune which now threatens mankind, was delayed by several centuries. In their thousand-year-long struggle against the Church of Christ, the Jews used as their principal weapon of battle the fifth column, quote-unquote. Again, the number five, ladies and gentlemen. And there it is. Now, I never realized that until this very moment. The fifth column were the communists in America, or the Freemasons, etc., etc. The fifth column, I think it's very interesting, isn't it? See, listen what he says right here again. In their thousand-year-long struggle against the Church of Christ, the Jews used as their principal weapon of battle the fifth column, quote-unquote, which arose as thousands and thousands of Jews all over the world were converted in a hypocritical manner to Christianity. I hope you're listening. I hope you're putting these dots together in your mind. You know, it's when they forced them to convert to Christianity, they were unaware that the Jews would just say, oh, yeah, I'm a Christian now, but they didn't practice Christian. They hate Christ. You can't make somebody convert to be a Christian if they hate Christ. It just doesn't work. You know what I mean? And so it would have to be under the guise of a pretense. And that's exactly what the Jews did. So they became a fifth column themselves, too, on top of the whole thing. So, you know, they pretended so that they could penetrate the church that they were actually Christians. And so that they could take advantage of being the same crap that they are, but pretending they were Christians so that they could have an advantage. Another guise of religion, you see, just like they're pretending Judaism is a religion and a holy one at that. They were pretending to be Christians and using that as a guise to gain advantage, not only in, but outside the church, in business, and so on and so forth, right? Okay, back to the book. The already mentioned Jewish historian Cecil Roth confirms in his previously quoted work, Storia del Popolo Ebraico, page 229, Milan, 1962, that, naturally, the conversions were for the most part a pretense. They were baptized and remained nevertheless just as much Jews in secret as before, although they had given themselves Christian names. Hello. They went to Mass and frivolously received the sacraments. They then used their new position as seeming Christians to set up false teachings, which developed into underground movements. This would have brought about the dissolution of the Christianity and secured the rule by Jewry over all peoples, as will be elaborated on later with irrefutable proofs. Now, let me stop and comment again. When Martin Luther put the 95 Theses on the Catholic Church door, it opened up. These Jews were pretending they're Christians and they were teaching false teachings, right? Well, Calvin just happens to be one of those new denominations of Christianity. And Calvin, his name was Coughlin. He's a Jew. He was the one that said, a little usury is okay. See, gradualism again. First, no usury is okay. And now, a little usury is okay. See, so Calvin was not a Christian. He was a Jew. So you see that what he's saying here, by the Christians made this, or the Catholic Church made this mistake of forcing them to become Catholics, and they used this as a tool against Christianity and against the Father. You see? Are you catching this? It was soon seen that the whole of Christianity was threatened by death unless the necessary measures were seized upon to command a halt to the secret organizations of Jewry and the secret societies which the concealed Jews formed among the true Christians. The conclusion was reached that the church could only defend itself and mankind from the destruction by setting up a similar secret organization. There remained no other choice than to oppose the secret anti-Christian organizations with equally secret counterparties. So arose the very effective organization of the Inquisition Court. And often used, okay, let me stop and comment there. Okay, what they're saying here, now you see today that the Jews make sure that they penetrate every organization, right? It doesn't matter how small or how big or whatever, they've got somebody, a Sayanim, which is a Jew or a traitor, in these organizations reporting on what's going on. So today it would be harder to set up a secret organization against the Jews because, number one, people aren't even aware of how many of the people on this planet are Jews, and they're not Jew savvy. So if you had a group of white men set up an organization and they have no idea who's who and who's Jew, they'd have Italians in there and all kinds of things, and they wouldn't know what the story was. And a lot of Jews can look white as white can be. So this is the whole modus operandi. So this race mixing does a lot of good for the Jews. Not only does it put a life force in their blood, but they get to hide in plain sight. You see what I'm saying? And this is very dangerous. So setting up a secret organization today is very much more challenging than it was in that day. Let's get back to the book here. An often alluded to fact of the Inquisition is the burning of the secret Jews or their execution through the garrote, in which respect it is difficult to establish the exact number of those executed who were Judaized heretics, as the church described those who in appearance were Christians, but in secrecy practiced Judaism. Let's just stop right there for a second and let me see what the garrote is. I mean, is it a guillotine or what is it? Their execution through the garrote. Let's just see what that is. I'm sure all of you know what it is, but I have to find out what it is. Kill someone by strangulation, typically with an iron collar or a length of wire or cord. He had been garroted with piano wire, a wire cord or apparatus used to strangle someone. Well, I would say a rope is a garrote. Okay, there you go. So that was the method they used to kill these people. So it says, I'll read the paragraph again. An often alluded to fact of the Inquisition is the burning of the secret Jews or their execution through the garrote, in which respect it is difficult to establish the exact number of those executed who were Judaized heretics. As the church described those who in appearance were Christians, but in secrecy practiced Judaism. Many estimate that at thousands and others at tens of thousands, the number of underground Jews who were killed by the Inquisition. However, whatever number it may be, the enemies of the church have directed unjustified attacks against it on account of this procedure. The mitigation of responsibility that has been granted the church on the grounds that it did not directly execute those found guilty, but handed them over to a worldly authority, is easily refuted by the enemies of Catholicism. They say that although the church did not directly condemn and kill them, then nevertheless it gave its approval to the inquisitorial procedures and to the death laws that punished the backsliding Jewish heretics with death. Well, let me stop and comment about this. Well, they're trying to say that this is such an evil thing that the Inquisition was, right? Because it killed these Jews. But what do the Jews do today all the time? See, we're talking about Jews are such hypocrites. You just have to realize that, you know, this is the pot calling the kettle black here. So, I mean, this is ridiculous nonsense. The Jews are a ridiculous people. What's even more ridiculous is that people don't call them like Christ Jesus called them on their hypocrisy over and over and over and over and over again. Why don't our people see this hypocrisy today? It's so easy to see. It just blows your mind that they don't call them on this hypocrisy. I think the people think like that because they've been told they're God's chosen people, which is such a bunch of crapola. It's another lie. It's another fable of the Jews. They actually, they get away with this stuff. They get away with these lies. They get away with being pure hypocrites. And nobody's going to call them on it because they're God's chosen people. Isn't it interesting if you tell our people, well, no, they're not God's chosen people. You are. You're the real Israel. Oh, no, they'll fight you tooth and nail, half of them. So, let's continue. So, another weak proof of the defenders of the church has been the assertion made that the Spanish and Portuguese inquisitions were devices of the state and were not directed by the church. But this thought process is powerless, for one cannot apply it to the papal inquisition, which was in progress over three centuries in the whole of Christian Europe, and which was directed by none other than the Pope. I'm not going to call him His Holiness, who personally appointed the Grand Inquisitor. The remaining Franciscan and Dominican inquisitors exercised their functions as papal delegates with full papal authority. It is certain that the papal inquisition sent thousands of secret Jews to be burned at the stake, who, although they were executed through the worldly arm of authority, died without approval of the Holy Church. The latter, for its part, had itself approved the procedures used to judge them, the laws which, the laws which condemned them, and the executions. If the church had not been in agreement with the death sentences against the Jews, it would have prevented the same through a command. Even with the Spanish and Portuguese inquisitions, which were state institutions and where the Grand Inquisitor was appointed by the king and not by the Pope, Holy Church authorized the Dominican order in the setting up of the Inquisition courts to prosecute and seek out the Jews, to imprison them, and to conduct the whole process up to the handing over of them to the worldly power or of authority. Excuse me. One thing I wanted to say about this is it's very interesting that the king would, you know, appoint the Grand Inquisitor, even though it said the Pope did that before, right? Well, I've often thought of the Inquisition being carried out by the Jesuit Jews so that they could kill anybody they wanted to. But we'll find out. There's so much to learn about the Inquisition, I'm sure. So let's continue. Also, in these cases, the church had given its agreement to the laws that empowered the word arm of authority to burn these malefactors or to strangle them with the garrote. In order to establish an effective and convincing defense of Holy Church and the Inquisition, one must possess the courage to take refuge in the truth, and only in the truth. The church will never need to fear it, for its actions are always determined by justice and fairness. Therefore, with the truth, which always wins in the end, and which is expressly elaborated in the book with the title, The Jewish Fifth Column in the Clergy, a truthful defense of the Catholic Church is asserted in relation to its inquisitorial policy. You know, as I read you these books and as I teach you, do you realize that your IQ is going up? I didn't know what a garrote was, right? But now I know what it is, and so do you. And as you're learning these things, all through the shows that the Father has had me do right from the beginning, both your IQ and my IQ have surged. Do you realize that? So by listening to these shows, you're doing something good for yourself. You're educating yourself. You're being informed of what has taken place in history. You're being informed how it applies to today and how it applied then. It's something worth thinking about. You know, I haven't had a lot of support lately, and I hope that you'll consider supporting my work, because I try to do my best for you, and I hope that you want to be a part of what I do. By helping me in my work, you help me to continue this work. You know, money's not the real motivation, but I have to keep my head above water. You understand? Like, I really never want to mention it at all, but it's like you're making me mention it. And I will, because it says, ask and ye shall receive. And I will ask you to help me in my work. I will ask you to give of yourself as I give of myself for you. And I hope you will do that. This is all coming to you from davidjamesboston.com. And there you'll find a link where you can take part in this work that I'm doing in helping to educate our people. Take time to do that, folks. Show that you're part of what's going on here, that you care about your people, and that you care about me like I care about you. Don't be stingy. You'll regret that in the future. Anyway, enough of that for now. So, let's continue. First, we will begin with the proof that the Jews are not untouchable people by virtue of the fact that at one time they were the chosen people of God. They've never been the chosen people of God. But on the contrary, Yahweh predicted to them that in the event of their not keeping his commandments, they would be very severely punished. From this consideration, the policy of the church towards the Jews with regard to the Inquisition has a broad theological foundation. The Jews still boast at present of being the chosen people of Yahweh. They never say Yahweh, they say of God, which means the devil for them, which they tend to substantiate based upon certain passages of the Holy Bible, of which they give a false and ambiguous interpretation. However, in doing so, they are very careful to avoid other biblical passages in which Yahweh clearly and unequivocally linked this privilege to the condition that they faithfully fulfilled the commandments and other commandments of Yahweh under the threat that if they would not do so, the distinction of being the chosen people would be withdrawn and they would be transformed into an accursed people who would be encounter diverse punishments which were expressly indicated to Moses by God. I'm going to just stop right there. Again, they do not understand that the Jews are not the Israelites. They just don't get it. These people don't know it. And I can't really blame them because this has deliberately been hidden. These people are the Edomites. There is no promises to Edomites that they would be anything. They are nothing. They are the enemies of the Israelites. They are not the chosen people. This is trickery. And it's funny that, I mean, after a while, Can't you understand that all the Jew does is lie most of the time? And if I was lying to you, which I wouldn't do because I wouldn't lie to the Holy Spirit in you, and I've warned others not to do that, and they do it anyway. You see, if I lied to you continually, would you still listen to me? Would you want to listen to an avowed liar, somebody that was lying all the time and based everything on lies? You wouldn't listen very long. I wouldn't. I'm very, very anti-liar. I really abhor liars. And Jews are liars. And so they've tried to weave themselves into the fabric of Christianity, is what they've done. But they're not part of us at all. They don't belong with us. They're not of us. They never were of us. They never will be of us. Oh, yes, Esau was Jacob's brother, but he went and race mixed and was absorbed into the Edomites, which is this modern Jewry today. They mix with white people, but they're not of us. They've tricked people into mixing with them. Ladies and gentlemen, make no mistake, these people are complete liars. They're in the truth movement. They got themselves ensconced in it, and they weaved themselves into the truth movement. And I'm going to tell you, really, the truth movement was spawned probably by Jews. You know, the Bill Coopers and all these people. They wanted you to know about the Illuminati, I guarantee that. Because they wanted you to believe it was the Illuminati, not the Jew. That's why. And all the recent truth movement people, well, I'll say the modern truth movement is Jews, okay? Starting maybe in the 60s and 70s. People before that weren't Jews, okay? So I'm not saying at the beginning, I'd like to, you know, just kind of retool what I said. The modern truth movement is saturated with Jews. When you hear the name, I cracked up right away when I heard the name Rose Delacroix. See, Rose Croix is the Rosicrucian thing. Do you understand? Now, immediately, I don't want to hear from the woman. But number two, the name gives it all away. But there's tons of them like this. I would say 90-something percent of the truth movement are Jews. The modern truth movement. And that is a good, probably a good ratio. It's just a guesstimation, but it's probably pretty true. You've got these people like Adam Green, who I've already showed you, is Jew and is an agent. I knew right away he wasn't a white man, but he looks white. But he was one of these shooting stars. These people just come right out of the woodworks. And they have YouTube channels with thousands and thousands of subscribers. It happens just like, boom. That's how I know. So, let's continue here. So, they've ensconced themselves, is what's happening here, by calling them God's chosen people, right? So, he says, however, the Jews attempted to conceal this position of things, just as certain Christian clergy attempt to do so, whose apparently inexplicable conduct, that means unexplainable conduct, more favors Jewry and its revolutionary plans than the Holy Church of Christ. In Deuteronomy of the Holy Bible, chapter 28, verses 1 and 2, Moses, who conveys the divine will to the Hebrews, which aren't Jews, describes quite clearly this situation. And it shall come to pass, if thou shalt hearken diligently unto the voice of Yahweh thy God, to observe and do all his commandments, which I command thee this day, that Yahweh thy God will set thee on high above all nations of the earth. And all these blessings shall come on thee and overtake thee, if thou shalt hearken unto the voice of Yahweh thy God. From the foregoing, it's perfectly clear that the distinction of Israel as a people chosen and blessed of Yahweh is clearly linked to the fact that it keeps all his commandments and obeys the voice of the Father. Okay? Yeah, but that's not Jews. Israel's not the Jews. Okay? It's just that clear. It's very clear. It's succinct. It's very easy to understand. But it's also very easy to be tricked because they use the name Israel deliberately. You see? It is therefore completely false to assert that Yahweh regards it in a final and unconditional manner as a chosen people. Well, Yahweh does not regard the Edomites as a chosen people at all. So just forget about that. So I'm just going to kind of skip ahead here because that's a bunch of crapola. They do not understand in this book that these Jews, they do not get it. They're not part of Israel whatsoever. So the next chapter, let's see where we are time-wise. Yep, we have some time. The next chapter is chapter 4. Massacres of Jews ordered by Yahweh as punishment. The terrible punishments ordered by Yahweh against the Jews are also continually spoken of by the prophets in the Holy Bible. In the prophecy of Isaiah, Yahweh predicts through the mouth of the former various punishments against Israelites, which would be too involved to describe. Therefore, we will limit ourselves only to two of these verses of chapter 55 of said prophecy, while referring to those who wish to delve deeper into this theme of the Holy Scriptures. Well, I'm going to read this for your sake, because it's for us. This is not about the Jews, like they say in the chapter. You see, it's funny how this book has legitimate things in it, but it has many illegitimate things in it. Not deliberate illegitimate. They just don't know these people. They don't know who's who and who's Jew. They don't know that the Jews are not Israelites and not of any of the tribes of Israel. They have no idea. Anyway, this is to Israel. So we'll read it. But ye are they that forsake Yahweh, that forget my holy mountain, that prepare a table for that troop, and that furnish the drink offering unto the number. Therefore will I number you to the sword, and ye shall bow down to the slaughter, because when I called, ye did not answer. When I spoke, ye did not hear, but did evil before mine eyes, and did choose that wherein I delighted not. The prophecy of Ezekiel relates that Yahweh angered at the worship of idols by us. How will he not now be angered at the new kind of idolatry that we are doing today, I'll say. I had to retool this because it's wrong. So the Father says, therefore will I also deal in fury. Mine eye shall not spare, neither will I have pity. And though they cry in mine ears with a loud voice, yet shall I not hear them. Chapter 9, verse 1, he cried also in mine ears with a loud voice, saying, cause them that have charge over the city to draw near, even every man with his destroying weapon in his hand. And to the others he said in mine hearing, go ye after him through the city and smite. Let not your eye spare, neither have ye pity. Slay utterly old and young, both maids and little children and women. But come not near any man upon whom is the mark, and begin at my sanctuary. Then they begin with an ancient men that were before the house. And he said unto them, defile the house and fill the courts with the slain. Go ye forth. And they went forth and slew the city. And it came to pass while they were slaying them, and I was left, that I fell upon my face and cried and said, ah, Yahweh God, wilt thou destroy all the residue of Israel in thy pouring out of thy fury upon Jerusalem? Then he said unto me, the iniquity of the house of Israel and Judah is exceeding great, and the land is full of blood, and the city is full of perverseness. For they say, Yahweh hath forsaken the earth, and Yahweh seeth not. And as for me also, mine eye shall not spare, neither will I have pity, but I will recompense their way upon their head. In other words, you shall reap what you shall sow. Let me comment on this too, before we go forward on this. Do we see this in the cities today? Listen. Go ye after him in the city and smite. Let not your eyes spare, neither have pity. Slay utterly old and young, both maids and little children and women. Do we see that happening today? Even though this is talking about Jerusalem, we are the new Jerusalem, aren't we not? Are we not? So we do see our women being slain because they're race mixing. We do see children being slain, do we not? We do see men being slain too, but these aren't the men generally that have the mark upon them. The father's mark is what he means, not the mark of the beast. So, let's continue. The word of Yahweh speaks for itself. We cannot, without blaspheming, contradict him or criticize him. This is the divine justice, just as Holy Scripture reveals it to us, not in the manner of the enlightened Jews or even those clergy who pretend to be Christians, but who act as if they were Jews, falsifying and therefore working together with the synagogue of the devil. In the prophecy of Hosea, quote unquote, the crimes of Israel and Judah are spoken of, and the punishments which God will lay upon them, chapter 4, verse 1. There is no truth, no mercy, nor knowledge of God, or of Yahweh, in the land. By swearing and lying and killing and stealing and committing adultery, they break out, the blood toucheth blood. Chapter 5, verse 2. They will not frame their doings to turn unto Yahweh, for the spirit of whoredoms is in the midst of them, and they have not known Yahweh. And the pride of Israel doth testify to its face. Therefore shall Israel in Ephraim and Ephraim fall in their iniquity. Judah also shall fall with them. Now, has Ephraim the UK fallen in its iniquity? Huh? Are we not full of whoredoms in our nations? And we don't turn to the Father? Israel doth testify to its face. In other words, it is judging itself in a sense. You understand? That's what the scripture is saying. Israel doth testify to its face. Israel does testify to its face. Therefore shall Israel and Ephraim fall in their iniquity. You wonder why the UK is in the condition it's in today? You wonder why Europe and America is in the condition it's in today? It's because Israel does testify to its face. Not Israel over there. We are Israel. Do you see? Well, folks, as I always do at the end of the show, I give a stark warning. Don't go down the wrong hole. Mm-hmm.
belonged, you see. They never wanted me. The curse is laid upon my race. Useless serpents, they bring disgrace. A man without a face. Of time they pass again. It's so hard to tell where and when. Yet just do the best you can. The flames will burn away the waste. All the lines that they told erased. A man without. A man without a face. A man without a face. A man without a face.